Welcome back to the Hy-Vee WHO Radio Studios for another great broadcast hour on News Radio 1040 WHO.
Case IH, VetterEquip.com.
That explains Sue's insomnia. I mean, she's covering it 24-7. She doesn't get any sleep. Wow. That's dedication. Right back to conversation. What we're going to do here is jabber a little bit. When the Obama administration passed the health care reform, as it's called, Florida AG, Attorney General, said, hey, I'm going to sue. Here's why.
The United States Supreme Court is going to have to rule on the constitutionality. Right. That's going to be several months away, possibly a couple of years away. It's not something that happens in a hurry, as much as people would like to see it resolved. But it will be resolved. Yeah. And I'm confident at the end of the day, the United States Supreme Court is going to declare this health care bill unconstitutional.
Well, let's see. That Constitution thing keeps rearing its ugly head. At one of the town meetings a couple of days ago, one of the bloggers stuck a microphone into the face of Phil Hare, that is a congressman from Illinois, literally right across the river from us, right across the street from Davenport. And Congressman Phil Hare was asked about the Constitution thing, and here's what he said.
I don't worry about the Constitution on this, to be honest. What I care more about, I care more about the people that are dying every day that don't have health care.
You care more about that than the U.S. Constitution that you swore to uphold.
I believe that it says we have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Michael Bolden, thank you for joining us this morning. The Constitution contains a right to liberty and life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, says the Constitution expert over there in Illinois. What do you say?
Well, it's pretty amazing how many of these politicians either have never read the thing or are banking on the fact that people like you and I have not, because very little of what they do is actually constitutional.
Yeah, exactly. And that was the Declaration of Independence that
right.
talked, and it's it is part of our organic law, but it's not part of the Constitution. But you are part of the 10th Amendment movement. Under the 10th Amendment of the Constitution, what does the Constitution itself say in the 10th Commandment? I almost said 10th Commandment. 10th Amendment. And how does this apply?
Maybe we should think of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights as commandments on government, because that's really what they are. I'm the founder of the 10th Amendment Center, which is at 10thamendmentcenter.com. And the 10th Amendment, what it says, it codifies in law that we, the people of the several states, created the federal government to be our agent for certain enumerated or listed purposes and nothing more. That means the federal government is authorized to exercise only those powers that are listed out in the Constitution.
Right.
Nothing more, period.
I fully agree with that. But the ink was not even dry on the Constitution after it was ratified until people working the other side of the street, and they were there at the ratification, and even in the Constitutional Convention. Hamilton was working for an unlimited power that Congress, all they have to have is a majority vote. Their power shouldn't be limited. He lost at the convention. But he won, and his followers won in the culture over time.
Sure, sure. But the reality is, it doesn't matter if it's been ignored for many years. What's right is what's right. And Hamilton himself actually argued for the limited nature of the government in the Federalist Papers. And he was actually, when he changed his mind a few years later, he was almost considered a bit of a joke. And in fact, his fate was pretty interesting. He was killed in a duel a few years later. So that's what they thought of his viewpoint back then. And that's how they dealt with it back then. But the Constitution is very simple. It's written in plain English for the average person to read and understand.
So I agree with you. We should bring back dueling.
maybe that's the solution.
That would settle a lot of really, really nasty arguments. You could get Obama, and we could get the majority.
The
minority leader, Boehner, and put them back to back and said, we are going to decide whether to have health care on the basis of the results of this duel.
Well, it's almost like leaving the basis of health care or our liberty in the hands of 9 unelected, unaccountable justices on the
yes.
Supreme Court. It's like a coin toss.
Yes.
And you know, Thomas Jefferson and James Madison both warned us pretty starkly about that. And they said if ever the federal government became the sole and exclusive arbiter of the extent of its own powers, those powers would always grow regardless of elections branches or courts or anything. So it's, we have to recognize that we, the people, need to determine what's constitutional.
The 10th Amendment, therefore, and the 10th Amendment movement, you wrote a think piece the other day that I thought was really good, and you started to list all the different ways that the 10th Amendment could apply to a lot of the nonsense served up by the feds. And I was just inspired. By the time I was done, they said, yes, where's my pitchfork?
Right. Well, I mean, if we understand that, again, the 10th Amendment is a what's known in the legal world as a rule of construction. It defines the entire Constitution as being something for the federal government. It can only exercise those powers that we give to it. Then we can just look at anything they do and say, okay, national health care, is that in the Constitution? Nope. National ID card? Nope. Cap and trade? Nope. I mean, federal gun laws over and over and over. And there's so many different things. And in fact, it isn't just traditional conservative issues. There's very many liberal issues, like the drug war, that are not something that was delegated to the federal government. These are supposed to be handled where they belong, close to home in the states.
Well, all right. So how does this apply? Give us an idea how, because immediately after the passage of Obamacare, I think there was, 10 or 14 AGs from around the state, around the country, they said, hey, we're going to line up and we're going to sue somebody over this. What is the nature of the resistance? How does a 10th Amendment argument apply? What does it look like?
Well, there's a couple of different ways to look at it. There's the state AGs going for a lawsuit, but like we're talking about, it's almost a coin toss with the Supreme Court. And our system of government was set up unique in history, where we, the people, are sovereign. We have sovereignty, which means final authority. We weren't supposed to be set up under a rule of a dictatorship of politicians or courts or presidents or kings. So really, the Constitution means what it was written to mean,
right.
And what we determine it means. So it's pretty risky leaving the fate of your liberty in the hands of the courts. It's important to sue, and the case is going to be primarily focused on the fact that under the, quote, Interstate Commerce Clause of Article 1, Section 8, Clause 3 of the Constitution, they don't have the authority to do these things. But if we lose in court,
right,
then we have to recognize that we need to learn to exercise our rights, whether the court wants to grant us, quote, permission to or not.
How does one exercise a right that the court says you don't have?
Well, some people might be a little shocked at this, but I think you can answer that with one word, and it's marijuana. And I don't mean go out and smoke it, but if we look to the activism of medical marijuana people over the last 10 to 15 years, you may agree with them or not, but we can see them as a blueprint on what to do. Here in California, where I'm from, the medical marijuana state, they passed a law back in the 90s that, quote, violated federal law. The federal government said, no, we don't care what you do. We're going to enforce it. The people of California went to the Supreme Court, sued, and lost. But yet, they didn't repeal their law, and people are still following the state law over the federal law. So you could apply that to health care, and there's a number of states that are considering what are known as health care freedom acts, a law to basically ban national health care in the states. And if enough people and enough states pass these laws on a state level,
those would be nullification rules?
Correct. Taking a federal law and nullifying it, making it null and void or inoperable in the state.
Now, basically, the state legislature would do that, right?
Correct.
And basically saying to the feds, thank you for sharing, but we don't need your stinking health care bill.
Sure, like Andrew Jackson said on a Supreme Court case many years ago, you've got your opinion, now come and enforce it.
Well, the problem is, it's feds take our money and then they dole it back to us.
Well,
or sometimes they borrow money in our name. We get the bill with the interest, and then they dole some of the money back to us.
Right, and the key thing, though, is they take it from us. So the money is ours in the first place, and obviously there are a lot of complications with them going to fines from the IRS to enforce this. But I think the reality in the long term is if enough people do not comply and enough states back those people up, it's going to be very difficult to impossible for the federal government to enforce their
earlier I played the soundbite of the AG in Florida who's lined up to do this, and there's several others, and our own attorney general here in the state of Iowa, his name is Tom Miller.
Mm-hmm.
He was asked if he was going to join the lawsuit, and he was asked this last week, and let me play this for you. It goes about about a minute and a half. It's a long, convoluted argument, and I'd like you to evaluate it and help me break it down chunk by chunk, if that's
sure,
okay.
Sure.
Michael Bolden is on our newsmaker line. He's with the 10th Amendment movement, and you mentioned earlier, Michael, about the Commerce Clause. Listen carefully in his answer to this, and then answer and listen carefully to what he asserts is law. This is extremely interesting stuff. This is from Iowa Press a couple of weekends ago.
Well, you know, we've taken a good look at it, and our perspective is as the law. What does the law provide? Not what's our politics, what's our ideological perspective on this. You know, what's the law in terms of such a challenge? Does it merit a challenge? The first thing we noted that there's a history here, that Social Security was passed. They brought lawsuits, they weren't successful. The Civil Rights Act, same thing, lawsuits, not successful. The Voting Rights Act, lawsuits, not successful. So we thought as lawyers that we had a responsibility to take a good look at the case. When we looked at it, it's a very weak case. The main part of the case is to try and knock out the mandate for everybody getting insurance, because Congress didn't have the authority to do that. Well, what's the law on that? The law is that the Commerce Act, the Congress can use the commerce power that they have over interstate commerce mm-hmm. in certain cases. One of is if it's in interstate commerce, the activity. The other is if it affects interstate commerce. And here, when people don't have insurance, some of them get sick, very sick. Some of them have accidents and end up in the emergency room. And the rest of us end up paying for that. Nationwide, they estimate that it's in the billions, that the cost for those that aren't insured. That has an effect on interstate commerce. I think it's hard to deny that it has an effect. So the case is weak. Three-fourths of the attorney generals have not joined. Based on our best estimate of what the law is, and when they're legal matters, we try and call them like we see them. The case just isn't there, so we're not going to join.
That is one of the most interesting, convoluted treks through politically correct language that I've ever heard, Michael Bolden. First off, he appeals to law, yet he names none. Not a single piece of law he names. He points to two or three court cases which people file lawsuits against the constitutionality of Social Security, Civil Rights Act, Voting Rights Act, and they lost. So therefore, it's the law. And if you lose a court case, apparently the courts make law. And then he appeals to the Commerce Clause because health care bills affect commerce. It certainly affects our bills, and therefore it's under the jurisdiction of the federal government.
Well, we've got probably 10 different things to probably pick apart
yes.
in this. So
plus
we've got a couple hours. We can go through top to bottom.
Plus, you should know that our attorney general was heavily involved in the Obama campaign here in Iowa.
Well, what a surprise. I think the essential question on something like this, or anything
yes.
related to the Constitution, is what does the Constitution mean? Does it mean what the founders and ratifiers say it meant?
Yes.
Or does it mean what the Supreme Court says it means until it changes its mind? And this is the type of viewpoint, the latter, is what most constitutional, quote, law experts tell us. Oh, well, the court says it means this, and then it changes its mind a few years later, so now it means this. But the reality is, like any legal document, the words of the Constitution mean exactly today what they meant at the moment it was signed. So then we have to understand the meaning of the words back at the founding generation. And regulating interstate commerce did not mean anything that might, quote, affect
yeah.
interstate commerce. It meant transactions that cross state jurisdictional boundaries.
Well, what I was reading in my smart book the other day, Michael, and I have one called Making of America by Cleon Skousen. I've
yep.
had in my arsenal for a long time. And basically, the Commerce Clause was designed to create a free trade zone.
Right.
And
It was in essence to prevent states from putting up barriers to free trade. They wanted to make the trade regular so Wisconsin wouldn't put up a tariff on goods coming in from Iowa or somewhere else.
Well, that's exactly what was going on before the Constitution came
right.
into existence. All of the different colonies, all the different states were nations to themselves. And by the way, in one sense, they are still. And they had trade barriers. They had protectionist tariffs across state lines. The Constitution, the Commerce Clause, allowed the country as a whole to eradicate all the tariffs and trade barriers amongst the states. And in essence, we became a nation when we had created a free trade zone amongst the original signing documents of the first states. That's what created us as a nation when we got rid of the tariffs.
Absolutely, and we have to also understand that the word regulate at the time of the founding meant to make regular, what you're saying.
Yes.
It did not mean to ban or prohibit or
hand jurisdiction over.
Right.
It's just like, well, regulated militia. Same thing, just means practiced. It means that they get together and they practice being in the militia. I need to take a short time out, Michael, and we'll get back to the conversation here. Michael Bolden has written some very important things about the 10th Amendment movement, and he's a scholar on the issue, and I'd love to have you jump on board if you've mind to it, 284-1040 or 800-469-4295 in a sec.
WHO.
Attention all you lawn jockey motorists. Hurry into your nearest participating Napa Auto Parts store all April long for our big spring battery sale. Napa Lawn and Garden batteries are as low as $22.49 with exchange. Plus save an additional $5 after mail-in rebate. That's real savings power on reliable battery power for your outdoor equipment.
Napa know-how.
Gentlemen, start your lawn tractor engines.
Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
It often starts when you're very young, the pursuit of money. And when you get it, it's hard to keep hold of it. And when it's gone, you find yourself a prime candidate for bad credit card debt. Who can prevent your money from flying away?
Hi, I'm Tom Coates with Consumer Credit of Des Moines. The answer isn't blowing in the wind. Let one of our trained counselors show you how to hang on to your money. It's never too early or too late to learn how to save and how not to blow it.
If your finances are up in the air, call Consumer Credit of Des Moines. In the past two decades, Consumer Credit of Des Moines has helped over 100,000 Iowans solve their debt issues. Let them help you, too. Pick up your phone now and talk to the local credit experts at Consumer Credit of Des Moines. Call 1-800-955-5765. That's 1-800-955-5765. Call 1-800-955-5765. Or find them on the web at consumercredit-dm.com. Funny thing about German food, it's all got funny German names. Don't be scared. The German food at Hessen House is really the meat and potatoes you grew up with. Sink your teeth into Schweinshaxe, roasted pork shank. That's a real man's meal. Try Jägerschnitzel, Wiener Schnitzel, Bratwurst. All good old Iowa beef and pork dishes, but with strange names. Warm your belly with a big old bowl of Hessen House goulash with delicious homemade apple crisp for dessert. Hessen House serves Buzzard Billy specialties too. Hessen House, 101 4th Street, downtown.
The home and away voice of absolutely everything. News Radio 1040 WHO.
Bolden, and he is with the 10th Amendment Movement. I saw his piece on Lou Rockwell the other day on the movement and started to chase down some of the links. You've made yourself a historian, haven't you, Michael?
Well, I've been doing a lot of research for a number of years and get great insight from some top scholars around the country that we've collected to work together at the 10th Amendment Center, and it's really a great resource for people to learn and get active.
It's incredible the difference between what most of us were taught in the government civics classes and history classes and what really existed in the culture at the time and the assumptions at the time of the founding and in the writing of the Constitution. It wasn't as if we're inventing these arguments today. The very same arguments about how big the government is going to be, what its jurisdictions are going to be, what powers it would have, what taxing authority it would have, how it could spend money, what was the nature of human nature. All of these things were in the mix as they were writing these documents, and we're not inventing the wheel in our generation.
No doubt about it. And I think Thomas Jefferson really hammered it home when he wrote back in 1798 that whenever, and I'm paraphrasing, whenever the federal government takes on powers that weren't delegated to it, those acts that it creates are, quote, unauthoritative, void, and of no force, and a nullification of the act is the rightful remedy. In other words, when the federal government enacts laws that aren't delegated to it by the Constitution, it's the duty of state governments to pass laws that basically outlaw them within the state borders.
That basically say they are null and void and are not applicable because they don't have constitutional authority.
Correct. And for example, there are five states that have currently passed what's known as a Firearms Freedom Act. Montana, Tennessee, Wyoming, Utah, and South Dakota have passed this law in their state in the past year that says federal gun laws don't apply to guns that are manufactured in our state and sold in our state because they use the Commerce Clause as an excuse to regulate that. So they're basically freeing the ability of people to manufacture and purchase guns in their home state without federal involvement.
It might be interesting if we every state ought to have its own gun factories then.
Well, that would make sense. You'd have all kinds of great commerce going on in the state. Keep the business local. Give people jobs. I love it.
I was just talking with my listeners earlier in the week about a Texas town. It's down at Farmers Branch is the name of this town. Mm-hmm. They had an ordinance banning illegal immigrants from being able to rent apartments. And a federal judge says, well, that's unconstitutional. And why would that be? Because this ordinance, which says you can't rent to an illegal, the ordinance established a licensing system for renters down there, and renters would have to pay $5 fee and obtain a residency occupancy license issued by the building inspector, and they'd have to declare themselves a U.S. citizen in order to qualify for this. Well, the judge said, you can't do that. The argument was that this preempts the Supremacy Clause of the United States Constitution because the authority to regulate immigration is exclusively a federal power, and therefore you can't do that.
Well, I mean, the idea that the federal government would have authority over every issue, including the rules on apartment buildings, is absurd, and the founders absolutely oppose that. In fact, the idea that Congress would actually have a veto power over all kinds of state laws, over everything, basically, was brought up at the Constitutional Convention and soundly rejected by the founders. So they considered this idea, and they said no.
The idea, though, that courts are just arrogating themselves to these levels, and they can raise money, they can require jurisdictions to tax themselves, they can redefine families and what the definition of a family is, all because a court says so.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, do we have a court system that's supposed to do what it's supposed to do, which is look to the original meaning of the Constitution and explain it to us? Or do we have courts that legislate and dictate, kind of like the mullahs in some way?
Yes.
You know, they're a group of unelected dictators, and we need to put a stop to that.
Well, what is the resonance of the Tenth Amendment movement? What is it like? What kind of feedback are you getting from around the country?
Well, I think it's actually becoming huge. We started the Tenth Amendment Center back in 2006 and got the ball rolling back then. And since then, we've seen 37 states consider just basic sovereignty resolutions reaffirming the Constitution. 11 of them passed. We've got five states that have already passed laws nullifying some federal firearms laws. We've got three states that have passed laws already, Utah, Idaho, and Virginia passed laws to nullify national health care. And it's growing and growing. We even had favorable coverage on the front page of the New York Times a couple of weeks ago. I mean, they didn't write that we were a bunch of crazy racists, which was, well, to me, that's favorable for the Times.
It's interesting. The U.S. Constitution says, Article 1, Section 10, no state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts. How long have we been ignoring that notion?
That's been going on a long time. Most recently in the 70s when they pretty much ended the gold window. Right. But, yeah, we've been...
Well, they sort of had to, you'll have to admit.
Well, I guess in some ways, but...
Well, see, back then, as I remember the story, Nixon was inflating the currency, like mm-hmm. people are prone to do, because he wanted to fight a non-constitutional war. Fighting the communists in Southeast Asia when he should have been attacking Wisconsin.
That's where I grew up.
See?
I know all about it. We had a socialist mayor in Milwaukee.
So he ran guns and butter, just like Lyndon Johnson
right.
did too. Inflated our currency, and we had run amok currency, and we were debasing our currency. And at that time, it was the French premier, what was it? De Gaulle? Was he still the French guy?
I don't recall.
But he said, hey, and we were pressuring France to do something with NATO. And the French said, oh, is that how you going to play it? Oh, we want our money in gold.
Right.
We want our money in gold. Give us our gold. That's what you're obliged to do. Nixon thumbed his nose at France, said, hey, we're going to end that. We're shutting down the gold window. The French are always at the bottom of most of our pain.
You know, it always comes back to that. You know, it's amazing, isn't it? But, yes, the gold issue is a major issue, and there's some states like Idaho and South Carolina that are considering nullification laws that would, in essence, allow people to transact in gold and silver or basically whatever else they want to without fear of federal fine.
What is the sheriff's first legislation? What's that?
Well, this is an important piece of the entire package because a lot of people get concerned. Okay, let's say we pass this health care nullification bill. What will happen when the IRS comes in and starts arresting things? Well, if you also concurrently
with
pass
their 16,000 new enforcement officers.
Just amazing. Like, it wasn't big enough already. I mean, that's the first thing I'd love to see go away is the IRS. But the Sheriff's First is an important piece of the package. What it is, it's a bill that says no federal agent can come and make an arrest in a county without approval of the county sheriff first. So if there's a state law that says, well, we're nullifying national health care, and the IRS wants to come in and arrest somebody for refusing to pay their health care fine, well, then if the sheriff doesn't approve it, they're going to block, or what Madison called interpose, against the people of the state and the federal agencies to prevent them from violating your rights.
Do we have the historical literacy and the spine to do some of the things that you recommend?
I don't know if literacy is as important as spying. I think it takes courage to resist tyranny. And I think Andrew Napolitano said it great last fall. He was a speaker at one of the first 10th Amendment-only rallies in the country in August in Ohio. And he said, and it just rings true to me, that there are very few generations that get the opportunity to defend liberty at its greatest moment of danger. And he went on to say that this is that moment, and you are that generation. Question is, will we live up to it?
Besides just whining about it.
Right. Well, I mean, we can complain all we want, but if we really don't have the courage to do what Patrick Henry and Sam Adams and some of the other great founders.
But you heard our Attorney General.
He must be right.
Well, but if the people who are supposed to be protecting us against federal, illegal, unconstitutional intrusions won't, because he agrees with the federal, illegal, unconstitutional intrusion, then what are we supposed to do?
No, we have to start working instead of focusing on begging federal politicians and federal courts to let us exercise our rights. We need to put all the massive pressure, all the lobbying pressure on state governments. There are representatives in every state that will do good things. There are many more people in government on a state level. While I'm not a big fan of my own state government, here in California, but you have a much greater chance. It's going to be difficult, and there's no silver bullet, but we have a far better chance working locally to get the outcome we want.
But we do have the constitutional history, the original intent, and the supreme law of the land on the books in our favor.
Sure. And
all we have to do is use it.
Right. And it is up to we, the people, to use it. When we rely on politicians to do it, obviously, after time, they look at the Constitution as more of a nuisance than a binding law.
Or as you heard the fella say earlier in the conversation, the fella is he is Phil Hare. He is right across the river from us in Illinois, river from us here in Iowa, or in Illinois.
I don't worry about the Constitution on this, to be honest. What I care more about, the people that are dying every day that don't have health care.
You care more about that than the U.S. Constitution that you swore to uphold.
I believe that it says we have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
He's an oath-breaking, constitutional oath-breaking politician who doesn't even know what's in the Constitution, and then it uses the Declaration of Independence to bolster his non-argument.
Well, Well, and the bottom line with all this is the sad part is that many people will listen to him and say, oh, well, this guy's out there protecting us. Yeah. He cares for our life. Yes, he cares about the children. He's protecting us. But they don't recognize that most of the programs that they act end up hurting the poor much more than they help.
Michael Bolden, thank you for your time this morning, and I will point everybody to your website, and that is the 10th Amendment Movement. .com?
10thAmendmentCenter.com, all spelled out. And Jan, it's been an honor chatting with you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.